Okay, we'll be starting in a second or two. Hi, good afternoon, folks. Today is December 6th, 2012. This is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, the law offices of Rajiv Escana PC. This is our community conference call that we host every other Thursday. By participating in this call, you do not automatically become our clients, nor do we become your lawyers. This call is primarily for sharing information and providing you guidance. It is not intended to create an attorney-client relationship. This call is being recorded, so if you do not wish your voice to be recorded, please make sure you don't speak up or conceal your identity when you do speak up so that this publicly available information does not contain your personal information. I will start by answering questions. We have very few questions today, only about eight. That should take me about 20 minutes. After that, we'll be opening for new questions or any follow-up questions. I'll start first with follow-up, then with new questions. First question today was from A Saga 2003, who's got an F2 as well as an H1B. And he had asked some questions, or she had asked some questions the last time. There's a follow-up on those questions. So I've got both F2 and H1B on my passport. Wants to enter USA on F2 and not H1B. So the issue is, when you have an H1B stamp on your passport, it appears that you want to work in USA. Okay? So they want to know, if I wanted to make my intentions clear at the airport that I'm not coming here to work, I am just taking a leave from my office for 2-3 months, after which, if there is an opportunity, company will take care of visa-related items, and I'll come back to India. There's really no way that you can be guaranteed admission, unfortunately. All the things that you have mentioned, anything that tends to show that indeed your intention is to visit on F2 and not start working on H1 will help you. Okay. The fact that you're working on an ongoing basis for an Indian company, your pay stubs, your leave of absence, your explanation, all these things combined might make it easier for you to come in. For all we know, you may not be questioned at all at the airport about the H1 visa. But I think it's highly likely that they will ask you questions about that. Okay? So really, there isn't anything I can tell you which is concrete and definite other than the fact that whatever tends to prove that you are going to come to USA only for a brief visit, and of course what the reason for that visit is, and that your job in India continues, anything that tends to show that will help your case. Okay, so you should plan your visit accordingly and plan the documentation that you carry with you accordingly. You should also carry some documentation about why you're not coming on H1. Okay, you said there was some personal necessity for you, which you had to change your travel plans. Carry some evidence of that also. That should help. Okay. UDA THAX wants to know about parents' green card sponsoring. So parents were here, I-485, I-130 was applied, and I'm assuming it's a U.S. citizen's parents. So the question is, if they want to go to India urgently, and there's an interview call in their absence, they have advanced parole, they can travel, can they reschedule the interview? The answer is yes, you can. Is there any risk? There is no risk. I mean, the risk is only that the time periods are uncertain, you don't know when they're going to call you back. But definitely, you can reschedule a 485 interview. We live in San Jose. Can we get interview by Jan 2013? You can try contacting your local congressman's office about the approximate dates. Although local offices do publish the dates also, you should be able to find them on the USCIS website. Now, if you want to go to India, you wanted to know what my advice would be. Well, let's look at the worst case scenario. What if you go to India and you cannot come back for the interview? That means your 485 gets thrown out, but not your I-130. You can convert your case to consular processing. So that should not be a problem, which means you don't come to USA. You get your green card processed through the consulate in India, wherever you are. So at any time, you can convert your case to consular processing. It takes a few months, but it can be converted quite easily. Okay. So your question is, should I go or should I stay? Well, that's a very difficult question for me to decide. It depends upon how urgent the matter is. Obviously, there is a little flexibility here. As long as you re-enter within the life of your advance parole, you should be able to reschedule the interview as and when needed. Okay. About the local offices' procedures and what their requirements, etc., are for the rescheduling, you can check ahead of time. And another thing you can do is make an InfoPass appointment, go downtown, find out from them all these issues, answers, and plan accordingly. You're welcome to call in again once you have this information. Okay. Joyce B. wants to know, her fiancé was moved to USA from Trinidad when he was 9 years old, and he has now a green card. But there was some trouble, some drug charges. So when he tried to, on one of his visits abroad, when he tried to re-enter, he was held by immigration, and then he went into a detention center, etc. Then he... So he asked if he can voluntarily go back. So I understand he must have taken voluntary departure. He has been there now for 9 years and has been working ever since he returned, and there hasn't been any other trouble. So the question is a person in a situation like this, can they return back? Well, the answers depend upon a lot of variables. First of all, somebody would need to examine what was he convicted of. There are three kinds of crimes. There are crimes called misdemeanors, which are minor offenses. The fact that he did time and for drug charges, it makes it quite obvious that it was probably a felony and may even be under immigration law an aggravated felony. If it is indeed an aggravated felony, he cannot come back at all. It's a lifelong bar. Other kind of crimes, there may be waivers, etc., available. So what you need to do is, wherever you are locally, talk with a lawyer who practices before immigration courts. Show them the papers of the conviction so that they can assess whether or not any waivers are needed or even possible. That's what I would recommend. Speak with a local lawyer who works in immigration courts. Okay? Next question is from Rajesh. Rajesh, my name is Rajiv. You said, hello, Rajesh, sir. First of all, nobody calls me sir. Just call me Rajiv. My name is Rajiv, not Rajesh. You want to know, I'm in India, and I have two companies who are ready to file my H-1 in April 2013. Can both companies file for my fresh H-1B at the same time? The answer is yes. Are these both cap counted or one will be cap exempted? No. Actually, when you file, you just cannot file multiple H-1s through the same company. You can file multiple H-1s through different companies. And each one is a separate case. Whichever one gets picked up, you get approval through that. If you get approval, then you are cap exempt. Then if you want to change employers, it is no problem. So in selection, during the quota, you'll be selected only once. You can be actually selected multiple times. Let me correct that. It's possible that you might get two approvals. But basically, the exemption from one is sufficient for any future changes. Okay? Do I need to mention in either of the companies that the other company is also filing for my H-1? Read the form I-129. And there's a supplement H. There should be I think there's a question, has anybody ever filed for an H-1 for you or something like that? If indeed that question is there and you have the answer, you'll have to give it. But another part of me thinks, look, I haven't filled a form in years, so I don't remember exactly what the form asks. Look at the form itself. If the form doesn't ask you a question, then there's no problem. But maybe there isn't a question on the form, because I know other people in your situation, and they don't have to reveal the fact that they have another H-1 in process. I think the form only asks about approved H-1s. Approved, I think. Double-check that. I'm not quite certain about that question. There is no documentation necessary if second company files your H-1. They don't have to provide any documentation about the already pending petition. Can two petitions negatively impact the decision? No, not necessarily. I can't see how they would. Glenda Matute wants to know about her boyfriend and marriage to him. He's not legal here, but she's applying for her citizenship. She's quite close to applying for citizenship. The question is, how can I help him become legal? Well, ma'am, you too need to talk with a local lawyer in North Carolina, where you are, somebody who is familiar with these kind of cases. And there are all kinds of possibilities. If he entered USA legally and then became illegal and unlawful, getting married to a U.S. citizen will take care of that, okay? But there are other kinds of problems that might not get taken care of by marriage to a U.S. citizen. So it's difficult for me to give you a blanket answer, which will be true under all circumstances. That's why I'm suggesting you speak with a local lawyer, okay? R. Sundar wants to know, I want to extend my mother's B2 status for 3 months. Reason is post-maternity help, so they had a new baby. Well, here is the problem. First of all, when you talk about post-maternity help, it is very often misunderstood by the government to mean that, oh, she's working here without authorization, which is actually quite silly, because grandmas help their children and their grandchildren. They don't expect to be paid for it, at least not in our culture. So a better way to put that would be that, you know, she's here to provide grandmotherly assistance, in whether it is in terms of, you know, moral support, advice, as well as whatever else is needed. I don't want to say it's post-maternity help in the sense of she's taking away any American job by working illegally. So, first question is it possible to get an extension? The answer is, well, you know, it might become moot. Why? Because when you apply for a 3-month extension, it takes them 4 or 5 months to even get to it. So by that time, she would have already left USA. So it is possible, sure. When should I apply for extension? I would say about 15, 20 days before the current one expires. If you don't get a decision before the date of extension, which you have requested, she should leave USA. But make sure she keeps a copy of the application having been filed. So this copy of the receipt as well as a copy of the application itself. In case we get denial for extension, will she be out of status? She'll be out of status from the date the extension is denied. From the date the extension is denied. I want to clarify a couple of things. Actually, we have a video on this. Be careful with extensions. Typically, consulates don't like extensions. So if your mom is close to her having to apply for another visa, that would be something to keep in mind. Because when she goes for another visa stamping, consulate could say, wait a minute, you have a history of living in USA too long. But two quick antidotes to that are, one, make sure she carries a copy of her extension application, receipt, and even the decision. And two, don't come back to USA for at least, I would say, 12 months or so after you leave. So all in all, extension is possible. Make sure you make it clear that she's not going to be paid, nor is she expecting to be paid. She's here as a grandmother, and she's helping emotionally and, you know, morally in whichever way else she can. This is our first baby. We need somebody elder in the house who can guide us with all the things that, you know, need to be done with a new baby. So if you make that very clear and apply, I think it's okay. But keep in mind the risk at the back end of the consulates not liking this kind of extensions and coming back too quickly. Vela Babu says, my parents and grandfather are visiting us from India. I want to extend their stay for another 6 months. Can I file all three of them in one application? I think they're all separate applications, but you know what? Like I said earlier on the H1 application, I haven't filed an I-539 for myself for years. Somebody else does that. Other people do it in our office. But as far as I know, first of all, read the instructions on the form I-539. If it's still not clear, just call my office, leave me a message, or send me an email, and I'll get the answer over to you. Okay? So you can also email us through the contact us form on our website. My confusion is, what if my parents get the extension and my grandfather didn't get it? See, I personally think if you have a good reason, for example, you know, they are old or my grandfather is old and they probably will not come back again, I think those are good grounds, especially if they have a history of coming and going before. It makes it easier to get an extension for them. Okay? So, I'm sorry I can't really answer your question about one form or many. One thing is for sure, that grandfather and parents at least need separate forms. Would both parents need separate forms also? I'm not sure. Okay? Tarak Brani wants to know, I am a biomedical engineer. I work for a medical equipment company, sixth year of H-1B, I-140 is approved. Now, there's a better startup offer from a biomedical startup company. Company's only 3 months old. They want to do H-1B and then green card. They only have two employees. They do have decent capital to sponsor H-1B and startup capital for labor. So here's the question. This is something that I get asked quite a lot, actually, startup companies or smaller companies. This is the last written question from the forums. So as I had anticipated, we'll be done in about 20 minutes. I'm pretty much close to 20 minutes now. Let me answer these four questions, and then I'll start on follow-up questions, if any, and then new questions, if any. First of all, are there any restrictions on startup companies hiring H-1B and green cards? Let me split the discussion separately into H-1B and green card, because the criteria are a little different, okay? For H-1B, what matters is the company should have a professional-level job available, and they must be a genuine company. The fact that they have a certain amount of money in the bank as capitalization helps. But government is more focused on the nature of the work and whether there will be professional-level work for the next 3 years or however number of years you asked for the H-1. That's the focus of the H-1 inquiry. Green card is a lot more technical. In green card, every dollar counts. And remember also, H-1 salaries and green card salaries can be different. So let's say you are a biomedical engineer and you are working at a level which we consider to be, let's say, level 2. What is that? Somebody who's a competent biomedical engineer but is not so senior as to be working on very unusual issues. Level 2 salary, let's say, is $60,000 for a biomedical engineer. Hypothetically, he's getting paid $60,000 on H-1. H-1 has been approved. Now he wants to start his green card. In July 2013, he files his green card. One problem with green card is the salary is determined by the government. They decide what the salary ought to be, and the criteria they use are very different than the criteria for H-1. Okay, so they come back with, let's say, with a salary of $90,000. So getting paid 60, have to be paid 90 in the future. You file the green card in July 2013. Employer must have the capacity to pay that extra $30,000 from the date you start the green card to the date you actually get the green card. Even if they are a few dollars short of the $30,000 required, the differential between what you are getting paid and what you're supposed to be paid, even a few dollars off could lead to a denial at the I-140 stage. How do companies demonstrate ability to pay? They either show net taxable income on their tax returns, or we go to their net current assets, what is referred to as Schedule L, on their tax return. Okay? So in a situation like this, I think the most prudent thing, if you're going with a small company, would be to determine what is the level 4 salary for a biomedical engineer, because you might end up with a level 4 salary. Go to flcdatacenter.com. F for foreign, L for labor, C for certification, data center, C-E-N-T-E-R, not the Indian way, but the American way, C-E-N-T-E-R. So flcdatacenter.com. Go to the wage determination wizard, enter the county where you'll be working, look at the biomedical engineer's salary, level 4 salary. If they start paying you level 4 salary from the very beginning, and they have the capacity to pay you then your chances of getting a green card approval are much better. Okay. So all four questions are actually covered under what I discussed. There is nothing else that I can really think of. As long as the company is moving along a stable path, once you get your I-140 approved, then you can carry the priority date forward to other jobs also in case this one does not work out. Okay? And I have a video on that too. If you leave an employer at a certain stage, what happens when you leave before I-140 is approved, after I-140 is approved, after I-485 is filed, all these different stages. Okay, let me get started on follow-up questions. Anybody who has a follow-up question, please press 5-star on your phone. 5-star. No new questions, only follow-ups, please. Okay, we have one follow-up question. 2, 3. Okay, let's get started with the person who logged in the earliest. Area code 208. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Ashish.
Yes, Ashish.
Yeah, thank you for all the information. I think I have been bothering you too much regarding this multiple F2 and H1Bs for quite, I think, like 2 or 3 weeks now.
No bother at all. Anything?
As I understand from your... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no bother at all. Please don't worry. Go ahead.
Yeah, as I understand from your answer today, that I need to show the evidence that there was a reason that I was not able to travel to U.S. on H-1B, which got stamped in November, early November, I guess, right? So I need to know that what kind of a document that I can show which will be satisfactory for the people at port of entry?
I think it would be a good idea. Some things you'll be able to document. Some things you'll just have to explain. So I guess the various things that you would have to prove are, 1, you had a job offer. 2, you could not take that up on the H-1 because of personal reasons. Any of these things that you can show by evidence would be a good idea. For example, if you have a copy of the job offer, you'll carry a copy of the approval of H-1. You'll carry proof of some personal necessity that you had because of which you couldn't travel. Then, if possible, maybe even a letter or something from the employer saying that because you couldn't join them, the project is no longer available. I'm not sure what I can tell you. It's all common sense, Ashish. Really, there isn't anything here that I can say requires any deep legal knowledge. Anything that tends to show your genuine intention to enter USA without there being any need for you to work or any intention again on your part to work, then anything that shows that would help your chances.
Okay. Okay, but one more thing, Rajiv. See, I had 6 years on H-1B before, and then I had to stay in India for more than a year so that, like, you know, my cooling off period is completed. So I am personally feeling that, like, you know, if they feel that, like, you know, this particular guy has any intention of working, he could have come earlier, right? Because I had F2 before. I had F2 since last December, right? And if I had any intention to work before, I could have flown before, right? But still, like, you know, you feel that, like, you know, it is better to prove it to them every time.
I don't have much else to add to what I just told you. What you are talking about is basically inferences that are just common sense. So whatever you can demonstrate, another option you have is to just go to the counselor to say, cancel my H-1 visa, please. I just want to go in on F-2. Anything wrong with that?
Yeah, Rajiv, like, you know, I think you told that last time, and I was not able to, like, I was searching for this information. So if I go to consulate, like, you know, I need to have some sort of appointment with the consulate, right? What kind of appointment will I get from them?
So is you send them an email describing your situation and let them tell you what they want you to do. If they send you an email back saying you don't need to cancel it, carry a copy of that email with you.
Okay.
They do respond to emails.
Okay. But there is no standard way of revoking the H-1B, right?
No, they put a canceled stamp on it.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Area code 408, go ahead, please. 408.
Oh, hello, Raju, sir.
Yes, sir.
Sir, thank you very much for the kind reply. I am Urta X regarding the green card sponsoring by for parents by daughter.
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Actually, I'm the father. I want to go to my EAD and APR approved. I want to go to India. Of course, if I get an interview after going back, I have to reschedule, you told me.
Yes.
When coming back, is there any necessity for me to prove in the port of the entry about the urgency of going back to India?
There is no need, sir. I am assuming one or two things. I'm assuming that your I-130, 485 were filed while you were still in legal status, correct?
Yes, yes, sir. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You should not have any problem entering USA that I can see.
Okay, sir. Thank you. And one more thing is, suppose if I be there and apply for consular process, should I need submitting again medical test certificates, etc.?
Yeah, if you convert it to consular processing, they have their own doctors.
Oh, these certificates are not valid then?
No, these medical are for USCIS only. To go through consulates, you have to do it again.
So the better thing is to stay here and attend the interview and go back with green card is better, I think, sir.
Well, that certainly is very clean. I think that's a good idea. But, you know, that's why I said it depends upon how urgent your visit is. If you can postpone it, that will make things very easy.
Okay, sir. Yeah, I got EAD and AP just December first week. I am expecting by January ending it will be completed, everything. I don't know, sir.
Well, you always have the option of, you know, going if you have to. And you also have the option of converting it to consular classes.
The rescheduling can be done by myself, giving a span of some 2-3 months, sir?
Rescheduling is done once you get the appointment letter.
That can be done by me, rescheduling. I can tell the period.
You can't tell them when to reschedule it for. You can request it, but that's up to them.
Okay.
In other words, you can't tell them, schedule me for July. But you can say, please schedule me after July because I'm in India till July.
Okay, sir. So, thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much for your kind information.
Yes,
it's very great help for the people like us.
My pleasure. Good luck to you. Call back if something is not clear, okay?
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Good luck, sir. Okay. Area code 727. Go ahead, please. Area code 727.
Hello. Hello, yes, Raju.
Sir. Yes.
Yeah, this is Suresh, and I have posted one question on our forum regarding the both I-140s filing from different employers parallelly. So you responded to that one and joined in the conference call. So that's why, can you please tell me, actually what happened is my old employer was filed I-140 on October 30. And in November 17th, when I checked my I-140 status on online, so it got RFE. Still yet, my lawyer or my employer couldn't, my old employer couldn't receive the that RFE letter from the ESCIS. And this month, actually November end, my current employer received my PERM approval, and he is going to file my I-140 in December 3rd week or 2nd week. So do we have any issues which we got it from the ESCIS? Is the multiple I-140s are under the process at the same time from different different employers?
We have so many cases in our own office where okay. there are multiple job offers. As a practical matter, this is the reason I had asked you to call in, because I needed to talk to you a little bit about this and explain to you the situation.
Okay.
As a practical matter, we've never had a problem with any of these multiple I-140s through different employers. Theoretically, the government can raise the issue that, look, you have more than one I-140 pending. Who do you really want to work for? Because after all, when an I-140 is filed, it is an expression of the employee's intent to join that employer on an indefinite basis whenever the green card is approved or before then. So if you have more than one offer, who do you really want to work with? I think the obvious answer is whoever gets my green card first. I don't care. Okay. But that's theoretically at least a question that can be asked. It has never been asked before, that as far as I know. But as long as you are doing both cases in good faith, there should not be any problem.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, can I ask one more question if you don't mind?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, Raju, I did my 3-year degree in Bachelor of Commerce from the Nagarjuna University.
Sure.
That is recognized by the government.
Oh, I know.
And then
I
did a 3-year degree in Bachelor of Commerce, BCom.
I know BCom.
And then,
I
went to Tamil Nadu, and I did a 2-year post-graduation, that is in information technology, from Bharatidasan University. And as for the trust vote or other education evaluations, my 3+2 degrees are equivalent to the dual major in Bachelor of Administration and Information Technology. That equals to the baccalaureate degree of the ES. So in this case also, I finished my post-graduation. I have around 9+ years of experience in IT. So I can eligible for the EB2, right?
Well, I don't want to comment upon that, because I would have to look at the evaluation, and I would have to look at how the labor certifications were drafted. In cases like this, we are very careful that when we prepare the labor certification, we prepare it for EB2, because at least theoretically you are qualified for EB2. I haven't looked at the whole case. But when we prepare the labor cert, we want to make sure if for some reason EB3 fails, EB2 fails, at least EB3 is in hand. Okay? So because
same labor we can use for the
EB3. We can always add an EB2 again and transfer the priority date. But we have to make sure that we do that. So theoretically, you should qualify for EB2. Whether or not your labor certs have been drafted in that way, I don't know.
Is both this BCom and IT is a relative degree, sir? Sometimes I heard sometimes ESC is not.
I think they are related degrees, because in many of the degrees like information systems, the first a couple of years you take courses related to business or other areas, not just computer science.
Okay. Sometimes I heard actually ESS is denying the I-140 since they are not going to agree 3+2 degrees as equivalent to the ES baccalaureate degree.
No,
that's what
no,
I heard.
That's not true. 3+2 of proper degrees properly evaluated in related fields always works.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, this I have cleared, Raju. Thank you very much for your information.
Good luck, sir. Bye bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay. Anybody has any question at all? Any question of any kind? Press 5-star on your phone. 5-star. One question. Two questions. Okay, I'm getting just two questions, that's great. We'll start with the person who logged in the earliest. Area code 919, go ahead please.
Yeah, hi, I have a question regarding my two I-94 numbers and I entered on AP and other, actually I got H-1B approval later, but I left the country while H-1B was pending. So my I-94 that...
One second. I have a quick question for you. Did you leave the country while H-1 extension was pending, or were you changing status from some other status?
I was on parolee, and I filed my extension before my petition expired also.
Wait. See, you were not... Here's how it works. According to the Cronin Memorandum, about 20 years ago, the government decided... If you are on H-1 and you leave USA and re-enter on parole, if you are going to work for the same employer, we still consider you to be on H-1.
Yep, so that's why company filed extension then. Same employer.
It is okay to travel while an extension is pending. There is no problem there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So first question is it okay for me to travel if my H-1 extension is pending? After I have entered USA using advanced parole, the answer is sure, why not? Because even after entering on advanced parole, you should be considered to be on H-1 status. Then you file for H-1 extension and you travel. Is that okay to travel? The answer is yes. So far, I don't see any problem. Even if you have multiple I-94s, no problem.
So which I-94 is wrong? Because I got one in October and one in November, I got the H-1B approval. But this approval have the same I-94 which I hand over the airlines on in October month.
Who should surrender both I-94s?
When I will leave next time. But right now, I have two 94s. One is attached
in... You don't debate about which is the right one, which is the wrong one.
Uh-huh.
I really don't make a guess about this. I keep them both as the right one.
So, I'm on H-1B now or I'm on advanced payroll now?
Well, on H-1B.
H-1B. Even though that I-94 is already handover. Okay.
I don't see any problem.
And one more thing. So, even though if I don't leave the country, my wife can come by using this petition and stamp H-4?
I believe so. I don't see any reason why not. Let me think about this for a moment. The only thing that gives me a little gray area here is, okay, I traveled outside while the H-1 extension was done. Yeah, I think you're fine. No problem.
Yeah. See, I traveled in May also, and I traveled in October also.
I don't see any problem.
Okay. And this I-94, even though it is attached in my H-1B approval, which I already hand over to airlines, so is that okay, right? Whatever, I don't know why not USCIS sent me the latest I-94 when I entered in country in October.
So just keep copies of all your I-94s. Hand over all the I-94s, no problem.
Okay, and my wife should be able to stamp based on this. Okay.
That is correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Rajiv, very much. I appreciate
it. Good luck. Okay, let's do the last question of the day. Area code 703, my neighborhood. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. This is Manish. I have a question. I don't know, it might be tricky. So I have a friend who is on immigrant visa called IR-1, and her spouse is in U.S., and there is some problem going on, but she wanted to come to U.S., but do not join him.
Okay.
So would that be possible? And then what kind of status he might get into.
Okay, no, wait. I'm a little confused. So, your friend is the guy or the lady?
My friend is a lady in India.
So, her husband has a green card in the U.S.
He is a citizen.
Oh, he's a citizen?
Yeah.
She has green card?
No, she got this IR-1 visa.
You know, I have to look up what is IR-1. I don't remember.
This is called like a immigrant visa, IV category IR-1.
Let me just double check, because all this lingo I can never remember. I'm looking at the USCIS, State Department website.
Uh-huh.
Immigrant visa for a spouse of U.S. citizen is called IR-1 or CR-1.
Right. That's the one, I think.
Okay. Now, has she been to USA before, or is this the first time she's coming?
She would be coming the first time.
So what you're telling me is this. She has obtained her green card recently through marriage to her husband.
That's right.
He wants to come, but she doesn't want to go to him.
Yes.
I think that's a real problem issue. Because that appears to me to be a preconceived intent to perhaps even misrepresent their marriage to the U.S. government. That can
right.
be a problematic issue. I don't
mm-hmm.
think I can give an answer which covers all possible risks of any such course of action.
Right.
We looked at in a considerable detail, so I would advise having a one-on-one conference call with a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
sit down, discuss the case in detail, figure out what the pros and cons are.
Mm-hmm.
Entering with a preconceived intention not to follow through on the green card would be quite problematic. How long have they been married?
More than a year and a half now.
So not more than 2 years?
Not more than 2 years.
She's got a conditional green card.
Right.
Yeah, no, this is quite problematic. I can't give a snap answer.
Right. So is that something that will be able to assist? Like what would the...
We can certainly provide advice,
mm-hmm.
No problem with that, but I'm not sure I can give you any creative solution that makes any sense.
Right. Okay.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Okay, while we were talking, one more question has come up. Let's see. Area code 727?
Yes, Rajesh.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, Rajesh. This is again Suresh. And actually, just now you were telling about something. If we file a labor against the EB2, then due to some education evaluation, if 3+2 degrees is not... agree for the bachelor's degree, and can we same param or labor, we can use it as a EB3?
We do that all the time, because the way we draft the labor cert is we shoot for EB2, but we try to make it clear that if EB2 is not available, then the same perm can be used for EB3.
Okay.
Well, very good, guys. Good talking with all of you, and I will see you again next Thursday. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you very much.
Bye.